Welcome to Novelist Spotlight, the podcast where published fiction writers are interviewed to gather their insights and writing lessons so we can use them to make ourselves better and more effective writers. There are just three things I ask of you, if appropriate to you and your experience. Please subscribe, please click on the like button, and please share this program link with any family members, friends, or colleagues who might be interested or benefit from the content. Now, on with our program. This is Mike Consul. Thank you for listening. You know, I collect quotes. I've collected quotes for years. I have quite a compilation of them. Every once in a while, I stumble over a writing quote that grabs my attention and I capture it. And I recently picked up one from Stephen King, and it made an impact on me. I want to read that quote to you, and then I want to tell you why it's meaningful to me, why it had a particular impact on me. And I say that because when you hear the quote, you might say, well, that's no great shakes. It's a nice quote. He's right. But what's the big deal? Didn't he already know that? Didn't Mike already know that? So here's the quote. In fiction, the story value holds dominance over every other facet of the writer's craft. Characterization, theme, mood, none of these is anything if the story is dull. And if the story does hold you, all else can be forgiven, end quote. Now why, and hopefully it's meaningful to some of you, or maybe I should hope it's not, but not everybody is about the story or about the plot or the narrative. I don't read for narrative. I don't read for plot. I mean, within vignettes, I want narrative. Within vignettes, I want maybe some kind of plot. But I'll read books with open endings. I'll read books that don't have a hard plot. And consequently, I tend to write that way most of the time. And what Stephen King's quote did is reminded me that get that story down first. You can do whatever you want in between story points, in between the start and the conclusion and the story points in between. But get the story down, because it's really what drives readers ahead. Most people who read, I mean, if you look at popular novels, the ones that really sell a lot, most people who read are looking for a hard storyline, a definitive plot. I'll give you an example in my own life. My wife is a person who looks for a plot. She wants a narrative that's very definite. I remember when I read the James Salter novel, Light Years, one of my favorite novels, about a married couple, and at age 40, she decides she wants a different life and announces that she's going to leave. And then it carries on about their lives after this divorce, which he didn't want. And I gave it to my wife to read. Actually, it was the audio version. She likes to do audio as well. And she, after reading for a while, after listening for a while, she said, this novel isn't going anywhere. It's just a bunch of scattered stuff. It's not really, I don't feel like it's going anywhere. And that just reminded me all over again that I read for the writing. I read for the characters. I read for the vignettes. I read for the writing, the style, the pacing, and yes, the mood, as Stephen King referenced. And most people don't. Most people are really just, give me the story. So the reason that's kind of a revelation to me, a repeated revelation, let's say, is that it gets me back to story, that even if it's going to be a loosely woven story, what I need to do, what we need to do, is to make sure that the story is established. And we can be as flamboyant or colorful within that. I think people tend to look at, and I do think books, novels that are written with flamboyance or the author's trying to be insightful, trying to be colorful, oftentimes it can be a struggle. It can be a bit of a slog to get through it. Now, those are the kind of writers that I like to read. I like to be able to move through it, but we want to be able to achieve things like flamboyance or color while at the same time achieving clarity. It's important to be clear, because when we don't have clarity, what happens? We lose the reader. Or we confuse the reader. You confuse them a few times and then we lose them. By the way, Stephen King, if you haven't already read it, his book on writing is really good, and it's the title implies instruction manual, writing instruction manual, but it's not just that. It's also a memoir. It's very much about his life. And then it gets to the writing instruction. You know, neither one is actually complete. It's not a complete memoir, it's not a complete writing manual, but it's still a very good book. I know people who think it's the best writing book they've ever read. You know, I would dispute that, but nonetheless, it's really good. It's satisfying when you get to the end, even though Stephen King doesn't spend the time required to really put the full memoir together. And the truth is, I've always been a fan of Stephen King, the person. I love the guy. He's just a great guy. I've never been a real fan of his writing, and I've read some of his stuff, of course, but I've never been a real fan of that. But just who he is, his lack of ego, his willingness to call himself the Big Mac and fries of novelists, it just shows a self-awareness and a willingness to not feel the need to strike back at critics. And the critics eventually, I mean, over time, he's, I think, won over a lot of critics. I was amazed to see New York Times Book Review had named his novel 11/22/63 I hope I have that right. 11/22/63. It was the date when Kennedy was shot. And that book, which is a big book, a lot of his books are big books. You know how prolific he is, just in terms of quantity alone. Was named one of the best novels of the year. Really surprised me, and I took the time to read it. And again, I felt disappointed in it. I felt like it was overwritten and so on. But I would really recommend his book on writing if you haven't already read it, because it's very enjoyable. It's got good instruction. For example, one of the points that he makes it that I think anybody can embrace is when you sit down to write, you gotta bring an attitude to it. You've got to be aggressive. I mean, that's my word, not his. I don't think he uses the word aggressive, but you don't want to sit down and be timid. And that's the way a lot of us approach writing, because it's the blank page, and the blank page is basically mastering us or dominating us. But we need to dominate that page. We need to write with confidence. We need to write with attitude, know what our attitude is, what we're trying to bring to the page, and then just pushing right into it. One of many lessons that he tells in that book, or suggestions about how to be a better writer. The other person I ran across recently, again, is Robert Gottlieb, the historically great editor of Simon and Schuster, and then later Alfred A. Knopf, who retired and wrote his memoir, fantastic. I'll talk about that in a minute, but he wrote on the cover of the New York Times Book Review, a long piece. The New York Times Book Review doesn't usually publish long pieces. This is maybe the longest piece I've ever seen them publish, and it was well worth it. It's about the 100-year anniversary of Sinclair Lewis's novel Babbitt. And Robert Gottlieb was one of the great editors who worked with some of the great names in publishing, such as Doris Lessing and John le Carré, and Toni Morrison, John Cheever, and then the list goes on. Nora Ephron, Robert Caro, the historian, and even helped Bill Clinton with his memoir. So when you have an editor of that magnitude and he's writing something, what do you think? You're thinking, I want to see what this guy has to say. How does he write? Is there anything about this piece that I would take exception to, that if I was his editor, I would bring to that page, that I would say, hey, Robert, right here, it's gratuitous. You don't really need this in here. Or this sentence is poorly constructed, or what have you. And it's a great written piece, as you would expect. And I did run across a few things where it's kind of like, you know, I would have handled this differently, or, but, you know, when do you ever read a piece of your own writing and not do that, or read a piece of anybody's writing and not do that? We're writers, so we're critical of what we see on the written page. We're highly critical of that, probably to a fault, and it probably holds our writing back. But at any rate, he writes this about Sinclair Lewis. I'm going to read some Sinclair Lewis. I got to tell you the truth, I've never read Sinclair Lewis. And I want to read Main Street, I want to read Babbitt, and I want to read Dodsworth. Dodsworth is the book that Robert Gottlieb says is his, he thinks is his best written book. Not his most famous, but his best written. Now, Robert Gottlieb, I read his memoir recently. When I say recently, it was probably two and a half, 3 years ago. It's called Avid Reader. And I did the audio version, and he reads his own copy. And it's a terrific book. You want to get inside a publishing house and hear about the life of a guy who, I mean, you know how he started out in life? He did a stint in the greeting card department at Macy's, and he ended up, as this one bio on him says, that he's kind of stumbled into the job, into a job at Simon & Schuster, worked his way all the way to the top. It's that classic mailroom, and ends up CEO type story. So if you want to read a beautifully written and completely engaging piece of work, Avid Reader by Robert Gottlieb, the great editor. He spent those years working with the greatest writers and editing other people's writing, and he wasn't doing his own writing, at least not publicly. He was too busy editing everybody else's stuff. He just loved the editing process, loved reading people's copy, loved working with it, loved working with them. And you learn about, the relationships that went really well and those that went not so well, and the full gamut of his career. His time at the New York as editor of the New Yorker, which was probably not his greatest time. I don't think that went the way he would have liked, but great book, great editor, great writer. So you really can't go wrong with Avid Reader by Robert Gottlieb. Highly recommend it. I would tell you, guys like Stephen King and Robert Gottlieb, they're inspirations. They're the kind of people who, when we pay attention to what they do, what they've done, what they have to say, they inspire us to do better work and to stay with the effort. I mean, let's face it, a lot of people drop out. A lot of people drop out because it's exacting work, or it's an exacting sideline or hobby. Writing is can frustrate. In fact, I would argue that I think if we treat it more as a hobby, and I'm speaking to those who are not published, let's say, or not published through the traditional means, and don't have a contract and a company waiting for them to turn out another novel. But when you treat something as a hobby, there really isn't that kind of pressure, that pressure that you feel when you really want to excel at what you're doing. And right, you can never excel at writing all the time. You have to be willing to just know that, hey, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to write something really lousy a lot of the time, and then I have to work with it and go through that whole refinement process. And that can be really frustrating. I think it gets better over time because you realize the alchemy really does happen. When you really do it enough times and you know that the alchemy is there, it will happen. You just have to put the effort in, or truly realize that this is not what I should be writing. It's not working. I'm going to go on to something else, something where I feel I have tapped a vein, rather than it's a constant effort of trying to find a fresh vein. But that's me. What inspires you in your writing? NovelistSpotlight@gmail.com. Write to me there. Thanks for listening. I'll be back soon. Ciao for now.